Welcome to Voices of the Community, which explores critical issues facing Northern California communities. This episode is part of our special series on how the arts and culture sector is coming back from the COVID-19 pandemic and features voices from the Arts for a Better Bay Area State of the Arts Summit, which was focused on rebuilding our communities through the arts. This summit was a live event, and this episode is edited for broadcast time.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the State of the Arts here in San Francisco. My name is Honey Mahogany. I am a co-founder of the Transgender Cultural District, a co-owner of the Stud Bar. I also work in local politics, and I'm chair of the local San Francisco Democratic Party. And I'm coming here to you today to welcome you into this space, because we have some work to do. As a San Francisco native, as someone who has grown up here and seen the city change over the years, I have to say that San Francisco is really hurting right now. And it's not just San Francisco. Many places are struggling to recover coming out of the pandemic and into this new economy where more people are working from home, where rent just keeps getting more expensive, and jobs are getting harder to come by. So it is incumbent upon us in this moment of stress, in this time when we are seeing so many vacant storefronts, so many issues, that we not forget the importance of the arts. Across the past several decades, people have flocked to San Francisco because it is a special place. It is a place that has so much history, has started so many cultural revolutions. When you think of the 1920s and 30s and the Beatniks, or the 60s and the hippies and the Black Panther Party, or when you think of the Compton's Cafeteria Riots, which happened right here in San Francisco in 1966 and was the first collective uprising of LGBTQ people in this country. When we think of the history and the contributions that San Francisco has made, it is something to be honored, something to be protected, and also something to inspire us to continue that torch burning. Right now, we have an opportunity. We are seeing so many people flee urban areas, San Francisco in particular. In fact, one of the reasons why I founded the Transgender Cultural District is because I was tired of seeing so many of my community members and my friends leave because they could no longer afford to live here, because they felt like San Francisco did not have a place for them. Well, now, as we are seeing these empty storefronts, as we are seeing the city empty out a bit, it is an opportunity. Not just a problem, but an opportunity to rebuild, and to rebuild with intentionality, and to rebuild with a resurgence and a recommitment to the arts. I'm really excited to say that I have actually seen the nightlife scene and the art scene begin to grow again. And yes, the Stud was closed during the pandemic, but we are absolutely working on bringing it back. We are bringing it back, and we are ready to inspire more drag performers, more party promoters, more artists to come back into our venue and help create the San Francisco that we want to continue to see. Now, you're going to hear from a lot of people here that are going to share their experiences, that are going to share their wisdom, and that are going to strategize with you on how we do that here in San Francisco and across the Bay Area. So I hope you have your thinking hats on. I hope that you're ready to share, and I hope you are ready to not just embrace change, but be a part of the change that we need to see here in San Francisco. So with that, thank you so much to Arts for the Greater Bay Area for having this summit here today. Thank you to Susie McKinnon for inviting me here to speak, and welcome to your summit.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for coming today. You're in for a tremendous program this evening. I'm Lizette Wanzer. I'm a San Francisco author, writer, and creative writing instructor. And now I'd like to do a land acknowledgement because we are here on the San Francisco Peninsula. Arts for a Better Bay Area respectfully acknowledges that we are based in Yulamu, the traditional, unceded, ancestral homeland of the Ramaytush Ohlone people, the original inhabitants of the San Francisco Peninsula. We recognize that the Ramaytush Ohlone understand the interconnectedness of all things and have maintained harmony with nature for millennia. We honor the Ramaytush Ohlone peoples for their enduring commitment to Mother Earth. We pay our respects to elders, both past and present. And now it is my delight to introduce a longtime collaborative poetry project, Michael War and Chun Yu.
Thank you very much, Lynette. Wow, what a wonderful sight. Chun and I are thrilled to be part of this much needed gathering. I have to let you know that I have to leave right after it because my I term out tonight as a board member of the San Francisco, as friend of the San Francisco Public Library, and so I'm being honored by the board tonight. Otherwise, I would stick it out with you guys. When I was asked to share my poetry at tonight's event, and then I heard the theme around rebuilding communities, I realized that it made much more sense for Chun and I to share at least a sample of our efforts to build and rebuild communities through our collaborative project, Two Languages, One Community, which we've been doing since 2015. We use poetry, digital imagery, storytelling, workshops, public programming, translation, and publication to build bridges between the African American and the Chinese American community. And these communities often live, work, worship, and create in the same neighborhoods, but are often unfamiliar with each other's cultures, history, dreams, and commonalities. So in our workshops, we use writing prompts and digital images to get participants writing on their common themes. For instance, participants might bring in photographs of family members and then write in reaction to those photographs, poetry, because that's something that Chun and I do, so we can kind of sample that for them. As for tonight, typically we project images with our readings, but tonight we're just going to give you words alone, and we will share two poems in English and Chinese that we actually use in our programming to express and to pursue solidarity. So I wrote the poem, "To Your Assailant Who Attacked Us All," when Chun and I were invited by the Chinese Cultural Center of San Francisco to contribute writing and video on how we were responding as artists to COVID. And this was in the early stages of the pandemic. It was a time of heightened attacks against both the African American community and the Asian community around the world and in the U.S., where the president led with rhetorical hatred, as well as here in San Francisco. So this poem is addressed to everyone who engages in that type of hatred, to your assailant who attacks us all. Do you call yourself God-fearing, devoted to do on to others? Does your God condone your violence, your ignorance, your corruption? Does your God hate your neighbor like you do? Does your God share your love for prophets bearing false witness, fueling your grievance fever? Do you swallow the lies they regurgitate? Do you really need a reason? Are you truly a true believer of both God and golden calf? Does the all-knowing know you? Do they love you as you are? Does it matter that they are watching your naked depravity? Do they pray? Do you pray before you pray on innocence in this guilty world? Do you have your God's blessing, or are you as godless as you seem? Did your father teach you to beat the mean and maim? Is he proud of your cowardice? Does your mother say, "Well done, son"? Did they train you in backwardness? Do you feel bigger in your smallness, content with acts of uselessness? Is your inner bully seething still beneath your concealed surface? Are you comforted in your criminality, stupefied by superiority, simply insane or lost? Who are you? And now Chun will recite the poem that she translated in Chinese.
First, I give you the Chinese version of Michael's poem. 致攻击你们的人，他们在攻击我们所有人。你自称敬畏上帝吗？你致力于己所不欲，勿施于人吗？你的上帝宽恕了你的暴力，你的无知，你的腐败吗？你的上帝像你这样仇恨你的邻居吗？你的上帝会认同你的？ 带着假见证，让你的愤怒不平不断发烧的所谓的先知的爱吗？你吞下他们反复口吐的谎言吗？你真的需要旅游吗？ 你是你的神和金牛犊真正的信徒吗？你那全知的神认识你吗？他们会爱这样的你吗？你在乎他们看着你赤裸的堕落吗？在洗礼这个有罪的世界上的无辜者时，你祈祷吗？你有上帝的祝福吗？还是像你看起来那样没有上帝？你的父亲教你去攻击、贬低和残害他人吗？他会为你的怯懦感到骄傲吗？你的母亲会说：“干得好，儿子吗？”他们训练你倒退落后了吗？你卑鄙渺小时感到更强大吗？你满足于自己无意的行为吗？隐藏在你的表面下的恶霸还在沸腾吗？你在被优越性麻木了的犯罪中受到了安慰吗？是疯了还是迷路了？你是谁？ Thank you. I want to thank you all again for being here and in this very special evening with us, all communities united to move forward. I also want to thank my collaborator Michael again for this incredible and a timely poem of solidarity just as the anti-Asian violence start to happen all around. It was a very difficult time. So we write a lot of poems in the theme of solidarity, and also we also aspire to bring out that universal love which will unite us all. So I am a scientist turned writer and first generation immigrant, and I'm going to share with you a poem called The Map, and many people call it The Map of Love. And I wrote this initially for my parents, and whom I love very dearly, and the poem was first published by the oldest newspaper in China. And then when I came back here during the pandemic, it was published by our public library's Poem of the Day series in both English and Chinese. And then our very own Aryan Press, which is also a national treasure, without me knowing, after a few months of debate, picked this poem to be dedicated to the 2021 students who survived the pandemic, and also all of the people who endured the pandemic. And I give this poem, The Map of Love, to all of you. The map. When I was born, your bosom was the map. I occupied all of it in your cradling arms. When I began to walk, your eyesight was the map. I learned my steps, toddling and waddling in your adoring gaze. When I started school, your mind became the map. I ventured out and back from morning to night in your unceasing care. When I grew up and left home, from hometown to other towns, home country to other countries, your heart became the map. I searched far and wide, high and low, for my direction and place in the world, in your loving thoughts. Each time I set out for a journey, you asked for my destination, studied an open map, accurately locating the point of my being. Then one day, you picked up a magnifying glass, eyes moving closer and closer, hands trembling more and more. Finally, at a loss, no longer seeing clearly, the lines and the points on the map. You hold me in your heart. Growing older and older, you can now only walk in my eyesight, fumbling steps, every trip outside, an adventure. From now on, I will walk by your side, so you can lean on me when we are at a loss, not knowing where to go. Love is the map. Thank you.
Thank you, June.
Thank you.
We just want to encourage you to visit our website and look us up online for Two Languages, One Community. You'll find what we share tonight in both English and Chinese. And we hope to see you again. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, everybody. Hello, I am Susie McKinnon with Arts for a Better Bay Area. We are the instigator of today's event, but I also want to make note that that's along with many fabulous collaborating organizations and individuals. So I'd like to thank them and give them a round of applause for making today's production happen. Thank you. And we also want to thank you. We want to thank you all for being here. We're really thrilled to be here together in this beautiful theater, The Strand, to be a part of one event that we feel doesn't typically happen, trying to bring the arts and culture community together under one roof. We also want to thank you for working in and supporting arts and culture. The work that you do, whether you're an artist, an administrator, or any variety of arts worker, the work that you do, it no doubt makes the world a more vibrant, more thoughtful, and meaningful place. So please give yourself a round of applause as well. Today's summit is for you. The purpose of the event is to bring the community together, to talk, to conspire, to discuss challenges, and also inspire, just to name a few. So we figure we should do this more often. Why not? So let's do it, right? We do plan on bringing this event back next year, so we hope you'll come along for the ride with us again. And we would love to hear your feedback and ideas on how we could bring this again back for 2024. I'm very excited to bring up our first keynote presenter, Maria Jensen of the SOMA Arts Cultural Center.
Hello. Okay. Let me take a look at you all. This is San Francisco. So I have a question. I like to start things with a question. What doom loop? Okay? What question? That's a question. I mean, what doom loop? I mean, so here's the thing. In the past couple of weeks, I have been going to art exhibits, openings at operas, the symphony, the ballet, name your museum exhibition, your party, your festival, your pink triangle, your laser, rainbow. It's just been one thing after another that is indicating to me someone's got the story wrong. And I think it's the media. But before I go on, I just want to take a little pause, and I want to remember someone very, very special and dear to me. And that is Ebony McKinney. And if you don't know Ebony McKinney, she is the co-founder of ABBA, and may she rest in power. And I met Ebony several years ago when I first moved to San Francisco and saw this incredible advocacy work that she has been doing in the community, and it's inspired me, and that is why I am here tonight. It's several years of working really, really hard, grassroots, with all of you, and I just want to say thank you, Ebony. So, let's get back to business. All right. So, counterculture roots in San Francisco are alive and well. I just want to reinforce that, because these roots are breaking through the concrete that we are feeling right now that is creating this idea and this very image of a doom loop. So, yes, we have issues. We have a lot of issues. And we have some of the issues in San Francisco that are both petty and insane and can only happen here. And I'm sure a lot of you can relate to those petty and insane issues that seem to be bred here along with the sourdough. And we also have, you know, very, very, very serious issues. And I think maybe some of you experienced them as you were making your way to the theater this evening. We have very serious issues on the street. We have an affordability issue. We have health issues. We have sometimes embattled city politics that are divisive and also work against progress. These are all the things that break apart cities and destroy cities, and it impacts the art and culture community just as much as anybody else. So the work is, we have to together work with the city to address all of these issues, and I know that we're all committed to this. I'm sure every single person in this room is definitely 100% on board with changing the, not only the narrative, but just the direction of the city. But there's something else I do want to say. San Francisco is far from being dead. I need to adjust this. I'm just going to stand here with this, okay? Let me get comfortable. So San Francisco is not dead. Far, far from it, right? So what I've been experiencing, and you've all been experiencing, are the barrage of the news articles that are telling us all of this particular, you know, narratives. But one thing I want to say about that is, we can talk about how powerful narrative is, because we're all driven by this negative narrative, and it's actually increasing even in ourselves as we talk to each other, that we're saying, we're using the language of like the doom loop, and we are not in a cycle of trauma. We have to break this image and this idea of a cycle of trauma. But what's been happening, because the narrative is so powerful, I've been hearing from people from all over the country, all over the world, asking me, are you okay? You know, you got bear spray? You got, you know, nunchucks. You got. I had one of my aunts actually send me a very strange apocalyptic care package that I think she found in her garage, and bizarre things were inside of it, like canned goods and weird substances and matches and a gas mask. And I'm not kidding you. This woman's like 89 years old, and she sent me this care package. So what I'm saying is, people really think the zombie apocalypse is upon us, and it is not. And I do think we could use a spiritual cleanse, for sure. I would say, you know, some smudging on every corner in the city might help a little bit as well. We need soulful reckoning. We need a community tarot reading. I think that would be like a really fun, wild thing for us all to do together. And perhaps we need a witch doctor. You know, we've not thought about that. We've heard all kinds of ideas about what kind of things we can do to change our energy. So I know I sound like I'm being a little bit sardonic and sarcastic, but what I'm saying is there's time for many, many changes in this city, and it's not all related to just arts and culture. It's also related to who we are and how we walk the walk. So I have a piece of advice for this moment. And actually, I have a lot of advice, but there's only so much time. And I promised that I wouldn't go over time, and I think I already have. So let's say, I'll stick to the script now. Let's say we want to reclaim our city. Let's say we want to take back the narrative, reminding people that this city was imagined and created by artists, writers, thinkers, and doers, people doing things. And let's say our cultural legacy and our history is precisely what attracts people to visit, live, and set up businesses in San Francisco. Let's say all of that. Can we say all of that?
All of it.
All of that.
All of it.
Okay. But here's a quick cautionary tale and some advice to help us understand this moment that we're in, this particular pathway that we're on, so we can understand how to chart our path forward from this moment. And again, these are just my ideas and my thoughts. So here it goes. San Francisco, it is too late to be late again. You can quote me. You can tweet me. I'll explain, okay? So I arrived in San Francisco in 2009 from L.A., and in 2011, I launched the ArtPad SF Art Fair at the Phoenix Hotel in the Tenderloin. And you may not be familiar with that project, but I'm proud of it because people told me that I wouldn't be able to do it. And yet I did. Never tell a Gemini no. So I'll skip over the part where, you know, I was just basically admonished for bringing a new project to the city. In LA, I ran a small gallery. It was an independent gallery focusing on emerging artists and also mid-career artists who were looking for like a different
way to present their art and a different audience to connect with. So my family and I were growing tired of LA, the LA lifestyle, the celebrity culture, all of that. And then, you know, also what happened during that time was a recession. There was a housing crisis, a real estate crisis, rather, and the writer's strike. So we're like, all right, the writing's on the wall. It's time to leave Los Angeles. So we moved to the Bay Area, where I have a very strong affinity for this region, and so does my husband. And, you know, I thought, like, this is a very cool city to be in, which I think it is. It's mind-boggling beautiful. And this is the region where many of the world's greatest artists, thinkers, and doers have emanated from. So SF, at the time I arrived, was experiencing a contracting art community resulting from the recession. And as they say, history repeats itself, and so do cycles of capitalism. Smaller independent galleries were trying to hang on. Artists were trying to hang on. And, you know, ArtPad was just designed to be a small offering, like an attempt, a safety net to hang on to the most fragile at the time. But like a sneaker wave, Twitter sloshes in to town, sets up shop on Market Street with the support of the Twitter tax break in 2006. They experienced a meteoric rise in capital and made billions when they went public. And this is par for the course for business. No hate on Twitter for being able to raise that capital. And as an art fair director looking for ways to subsidize, I think I'm over, a way to subsidize how other people could participate in a fair, everyone said, go knock on the door of Twitter. I'm sure that they would be interested in this project. They're right down the street. So I did exactly that. And this was the game that everyone in San Francisco in the arts was playing. Knocking on the doors of tech, looking for partnership, looking for support. Remember how everyone would say, did you reach out to Google? Have you asked Facebook? And my brother would tweet or text me and say, did you ask Adobe? It was just like everyone was just piling on, like, this is where we're going to find our support in the arts. It's from tech. And it's like the chasing the sighting of the Madonna. We ran all over the city, crisscrossing each other, knocking on doors, just giving Canva everywhere, looking for support. And the times were changing and challenging for the arts at that time, too. And this is how we tend to respond. This is our strategy, especially when we sense dwindling resources or the feeling that there's gold in them, their hills. We just lose our minds sometimes. And we toss acid-based thinking out the window. And you can't stop any of us from knocking on those very big, heavy glass doors where we imagined big piles of money were there for the asking. What a foolish sport. We cast our pearls before swine. Okay, relax. That's just an expression, and I'm not here to take down tech. Why would I do that? And honestly, what's the harm between two tech billionaires locked in a cage fight while the world is kind of melting down? In the very cities where they headquarter their operations, no, I am not here to critique that, but to highlight how we in the arts look for value in places where there isn't any. This means we're still not 100% dialed into the economic and social impact of the effect that arts has on cities. We believed in a mirage economy, literally an invisible economy that leaves little positive impact on the cities they land on and dominate. And now, after sucking up space and resources, contributing to the inflationary cost of renting space, let alone buying, some have downsized their businesses and some have fled, disappeared into thin air. And yes, some of this is business activity that was tied to the pandemic, of course. But if businesses can quickly unplug from a city in this manner, this means there were never any roots. I will snap myself. I will snap myself, people. So these are the businesses, while necessary and helpful, with some tax revenues for the city and helpful in terms of employment, but these are businesses that produce limited community value for the most part, and they don't reach out to us. Times got tough, they bounced. But who has always been here riding the waves of capitalism? The artist, who continues to define what this city means. It's artist, who brings meaning and joy and life and commerce to cities. The artist. Who should be at the forefront of any discussion about what this city can be and should be? The artist. And to the cultural workers in the room, okay, whose passion and work is to amplify, uplift, champion, and support the artist, you are leaders, not followers, not dependents. You're not sitting at the children's table begging for more gruel. You helm, you guide, you protect. You are the front line of your organization, taking blows and maybe dealing a few. So together we are a powerful base. We have a powerful voice, and together we rise. But let me just say this. throughout all of the pandemic. We are all still here. We sucked it up, we toughed it out, and we kept the city popping. Now we are being invited and encouraged to be part of recovery efforts. This is a time when the art community's creative expertise and skills and talents are being relied upon. And finally, really seen as major contributors to the local economy. Well, let's make sure this visibility comes with value, real value. Let's make sure the partnerships we're entering into today are not just transactional and will end as quickly as they begin. I will snap myself. Let's acknowledge we have always been part of the recovery efforts. This work is not new to us. It isn't novel. Let's say we work with the city as equal partners to turn things around in a new, unique, and unexpected way. Let's increase our footprint in the city. Let's make this process inclusive. Let's make damn well sure it's equitable and fair. Let's solidify, bolster, and close ranks so that when the next sneaker wave sloshes in, and it's already here, we're talking AI, we won't get unearthed. We'll make ourselves open and available to any partnerships that might come from this next wave of capital, but let's remember all bubbles eventually burst, but art is built to last. The time is now, and it's always been now. This is the perfect opportunity for San Francisco to reframe itself and reclaim the commons. Let's create an arts and culture vision for this city, centering artists and cultural workers. San Francisco, it is too late to be late again. I rest my case. Thank you, thank you. I have a tip jar. There's a tip jar over there, so make your way to the tip jar.
You are listening to Voices of the Community, which explores critical issues facing Northern California communities. Voices of the Community is supported by a grant from the Zellerbach Family Foundation, whose arts and culture grants ensure vibrant work is created, new voices are celebrated, and artists and audiences inclusive of the Bay Area's diverse communities and cultures have opportunities to thrive. Find out more at zff.org. And by a grant from the Peaceful World Foundation, dedicated to fostering a culture of global peace through the promotion of hosted conversations and education. Learn more at peacefulworldfoundation.org.
It is my great honor and privilege and joy to introduce to you someone I'm sure many of you know. And if you don't know, you're going to get to know this person. I'm introducing you to Ralph Remington, who is our Director of Cultural Affairs for the San Francisco Arts Commission. And you will always recognize Ralph when he's out because Ralph brings the look, the fashion. I want to present to you Ralph Remington, Director of Cultural Affairs.
Man, how y'all doing? So, damn. It's 2023, and I moved here in January of 2021. I started my job in January of 2021, and as Director of Cultural Affairs for the San Francisco Arts Commission. I previously was Deputy Director of Arts and Culture for the City of Tempe, Arizona, and that's a whole other story. And while I'm on that story, I would say, the first thing I would say to this community is I have a background, obviously, in arts. I'm a lifelong artist, policymaker, philosopher, dreamer, institution builder, community builder, all of those things. But coming from Arizona, just immediately, I'm really originally from Philadelphia, West Philly. Nobody's getting slapped here tonight. West Philadelphia, born and raised. But Arizona is a particular type of mess. A particular type of sickness. And coming here to what I consider to be free territory, I know who the enemy is, and it's not us. So one of the things that I would say to this community coming from a repressed community is let's turn to each other, not on each other. Let's bond together, find our commonality, not our differences, because the enemy, I've seen the enemy in Arizona. And it is not us. So when we have small differences with each other, Let's recognize them for what that is, and let's stop this San Francisco bickering that we're famous for in killing each other over really tiny differences, and let's bond together over the big stuff, because the big stuff is coming, and it's here, and it's big and hairy and gross, and we need everybody's power and participation to disrupt these evil forces. We experienced in 2020 a racial reckoning and a pandemic all at the same time, and yet we're still here. So what does that mean? It means that we have to fight every day for what is ours. We have to believe in who we are. We have to come together in our communities and amplify our cultures to each other and express ourselves to each other meaningfully and spiritually so that it's real. So that there's a real bonding, a real authenticity in our relationships, not superficial, not posing behind a label, not posing behind this is my affinity group and that's my affinity group. We are all in the human affinity group. We're humans. And we have to figure out what that is in this new moment going ahead. What is it to be a human in this particular moment? Not a political figure, not a typical, what's my particular a group that I feel that I belong to and how that group is better or more entitled to resources than this other group. That's not who we are. We have to figure out who's human and who isn't. Oh, they might have blood and DNA and all that other stuff, but are they really human? And do they really express humanity? Do they really come from a spiritual core, regardless of religion? I'm not particularly religious myself, but spiritual core. Who are you? What drives you? What drives your existence? That's what we have to figure out. That's what we have to grapple with. And I'm not here tonight to provide you with those answers because I readily don't have them. But I'm here to help figure them out with you. That's what I want to do, and that's my commitment. So I just wanted to start off by saying that before I get into kind of nuts and bolts of kind of what we do at the Arts Commission and blah, 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 blah. I think it's important to have that human conversation and to really talk about what it is to be in community, what community really feels like, what it really means, what it really expresses. What do we think about when we say art? What do we think about when we say culture? Whose culture is it? What culture are we trying to express? Why do organizations exist? Maybe organizations have existed for 20 or 30 years, and maybe it's time for those organizations to leave. Because there's no permanence in anything. If 2020 taught us nothing else, it taught us that. There is no permanence in this world. So just because an organization existed for 20 years doesn't mean it needs to exist for another 20 more. Just because an organization existed for 20 years doesn't mean that it shouldn't exist for 20 more. But I think those are questions that you should grapple with. Not just because we existed, therefore we should exist. What are you existing for? Who are you existing for? Who are you speaking to? Who are you speaking for? If it's just yourself and your board members who are well-heeled, then you probably shouldn't exist. Because if that's all you're here for is to pay salaries and to express how your board particularly feels about a particular issue or the beauty that they particularly want to see, maybe that's not what you're here to do any longer. Maybe it is. But I think these are things that we need to talk about. These are things that we need to grapple with. So the San Francisco Arts Commission is focused on highlighting and uplifting the voices, art, and stories of BIPOC, marginalized, and underrepresented artists and arts organizations, and remain committed to our core mission of cultural equity, lowering barriers, and improving access to our programs and resources, and promoting the arts as a vehicle for positive social change. We have 4 city-owned facilities and 3 virtual cultural centers. We've increased the operating budgets for each cultural center by 10%. We're investing over $40 million towards seismic capital improvements at the Mission Cultural Center for Latino Arts and the African American Arts and Culture Complex. We're ready to partner and provide support in recovery efforts. The Arts Commission is poised and ready to collaborate and partner with other arts agencies, other city arts agencies that are spearheading downtown recovery efforts, and will work with them to facilitate and create opportunities for artists and arts organizations. Our grant-making efforts are guided by cultural equity endowment legislation that prioritizes funding for BIPOC, LGBTQ, women, immigrant, and disabled artists and communities. In fiscal year 22-23, our cultural equity endowment allocation awarded over $16.5 million in grants to 94 nonprofit arts and cultural organizations, and also 84 individual artists. Last year, San Francisco Arts Commission launched an initiative to award grants to individual artists and organizations who have never received funding from the Arts Commission or grants for the arts. So that's an important initiative. These are people that had never received funding before at all, and that's the only people that were eligible for this particular category. We awarded 34 grants of up to $50,000 each to 13 artists and 21 organizations that are deeply rooted in BIPOC and traditionally underrepresented communities for a total investment of $1.6 million. Our Dreamkeeper initiative, to date, we've invested $5.3 million in grants to support arts and cultural organizations celebrating and supporting the Black community. Applaud that. We will continue to support these organizations with an additional investment of $3.1 million this upcoming fiscal year. Our Monuments and Memorials initiative. Our Monuments and Memorials Committee final report recently released with recommendations and guidance on the next steps. We recently were awarded a $3 million grant to support pulse check, accountability, and activation of future SF monuments and fund work over the next 3 years, and this was from the Mellon Foundation. The project will include a racial equity audit of publicly accessible commemorative works in San Francisco's Civic Art Collection, a vigorous community engagement and multidisciplinary opportunities for artistic activations in public spaces. We'll also continue our work collaboratively with communities to commission new public artworks around San Francisco through our 2% for Art program, our recent major projects with newly unveiled works, 49 South Van Ness, SF Fire Station, station number 35, Bow by Walter Hood, station number 49 was Serving the City Fence by Michael Bartolos, our Central Subway, two new site-specific works are there, Southeast Family Health Center, works by Ron Moultrie Saunders and Ramakin and William Rhodes. That's at the Southeast Family Health Center. Southeast Community Center, works by Mildred Howard, Philip Wah, Kenyatta A.C. Hinkle, and various 2D artists. And Yerba Buena Island, Point of Infinity by Hiroshi Sugimoto. The upcoming projects in the works are India Basin with Recreation and Parks Department, Potrero Yard, and Treasure Island. Work towards meeting goals of the 2018 ordinance of having at least, we're going to work towards those goals of having at least 30% of public art that depict real women in the Civic Art Collection. The newest commission is the Maya Angelou Monument by Lava Thomas, coming in early 2024. And note that most of San Francisco Arts Commission staff and leaders are women and people of color. The majority of our agency now at the San Francisco Arts Commission is BIPOC. Our strategic planning process, we're getting ready to start it. We're developing our mission and developing plans on where we want to go next. Who are we now? What's our mission? How are we going to continue to serve the community moving forward? We're going to review and update our current services, our cultural services allocation plan that will help guide our grant making priorities over the next 5 years between 2025 and 2030. And we're going to continue to work to increase representation of women and people of color in public art and monuments. Our goal is 30%. We want to continue to curate and showcase local and emerging artists through our gallery spaces in the War Memorial Building and at City Hall. Our recent exhibitions include Juanita, 30 Years or More, Invincible Black Soul, The Art of Bearing Witness, there's our James Baldwin show, Art with Elders, The Power of Creativity and Community, Carlos Villa, Roots and Reinvention, David Johnson in the Zone from 1945 to 1965. And we have some upcoming shows featuring the works of Juana Alicia and a collaboration with Mission Grafica. Our other high-level things I'd like to talk about is that we can't, and going back to kind of what I started with, we have to figure out a new way of engaging with our community and our patrons. The old way isn't coming back. So we can't keep kind of beckoning, thinking about the way it used to be, but we have to think about what it will be. And we need to have citywide festivals. I mean, we live in the Bay Area, right? I mean, how is Austin getting an edge on us right now? They shouldn't, right? South by Southwest, why wasn't that here? But we need to have something like that here, an iconic festival across the entire Bay, so that people come from all over the world to experience what we all know to be the rare jewel that San Francisco and the Bay Area is. We have access to the world's greatest tech companies. What the COVID pandemic taught us was that we can't depend on one source of revenue stream to remain sustainable. In order for performing arts to remain stable, we must embrace technology, just as sports had to do at one point in time. Now, technology and sports have been so interrelated, we don't even think that at one point in time they were separate entities. But in that same way, if you think about the performing arts, particularly the way we engage in performing arts, we've really not moved far beyond how we were operating in the 50s or the 40s or the 30s or the 60s. You know, and here we are in, 2023, and we're still have the same mode. We still want subscribers. We still want people to stand in line. We still want people to come sit in a seat. I think those times, we have to reexamine them. So I believe that the future will see a democratization of the arts and culture sector. Most live performing arts will be accessible on flat screens for the general public. I think the live experience will become a premium experience. Some would argue that it already has. If you look at some of the prices that you have to pay to go to some of the big organizations, one could easily say that they've already locked out most of the people. So then the people can't experience those art forms on anything. Now, what if the people could experience those art forms on flat screens from the comfort of their living rooms, on their couches, for a digital subscription fee? I think that's the area where we need to move into. That's the area of growth. If the pandemic taught us anything, it taught us that there was a possibility there. So these are the new ways we have to think. And it doesn't have to be an either or. It doesn't mean that our theaters will be empty, because those theaters will be packed with people that want to see the live experience. But it means that a greater number of people will be able to experience the art forms that they're not able to experience now. A democratization, a literal democratization of the art form. So I think people will gladly purchase that experience. They'll gladly grab it. They will like it, and they'll believe in it. I firmly believe that this is something we can do. And think about it. Who gets killed in a revolution first? It's the artists. The artists, the philosophers, the poets, the dreamers, the people that reconstruct the society. We are the danger. We are the threat. So act like it. Act like you are the threat that you are. Because you really are. And they know it. And we can change, literally, we can shift the way that society thinks about itself through art and through our messages. We have the ability to disrupt. So our task is to disrupt and rebuild. And while building, disruption into our long-term strategic planning. Here we are in an area that is made for disruption. It literally gained its fame from disruption. Don't let disruption lie in one sector, and that's tech. We have the ability to disrupt too. So what I would leave you with today is, let's take our values, take our philosophy, take our dreams, take our energy, take our spirit, and disrupt, disrupt, disrupt. Thank you. I now want to introduce my colleague from the state, and you all know him really well, the inimitable Jonathan Mosconi.
Thank you, sir. Oh, my God, that is not... Oh, take that picture down. I'm so sorry. I apologize, everybody. That was a moment of hubris right there. Also, as I was flying back from Alaska, where I was at a conference, I realized that I usually look better than this, and I'm sort of embarrassed because these are like, those were the two of the flyest individuals in the arts, Ralph and Maria, so I'm especially shamed right now. And listen, thank you so much for including me here today. I have been so grateful for the role that ABBA has played in my life, personally and professionally. And I would not be here without the colleagues and friends who have been stewarding this scrappy organization for so many years. I remember the last time at the stewards, we all were together. Maria Jensen had organized a going away for me at the Battery. It was very swank. And most of the stewards were there. Joe, Joan, Vinay, Maria, I think. Definitely Brad, Susie. And I was sent off to Sacramento in style. But importantly, more than that, I was sent off with the deep knowledge that they had my back. And I've carried that feeling with me confidently over the last several months. And now it's my turn to have theirs and to have yours. The first task I set for myself upon entering the role of executive director of the California Arts Council was to get out of the office and meet the artists, culture bearers, and cultural workers who make up this vast, expansive field, a field diverse in resource, aspiration, need, and character. So far, I've only hit 20 of the 58 counties, but during this short time, I've already experienced so much, met so many people, and seen just how different we all are from each other. The issues and opportunities within rural Humboldt County are vastly different from those in Little Tokyo in the heart of downtown Los Angeles. Many folks in our field are living inside very red counties, where the headwinds in the authorizing environments are serious and require the members of our sector to electivize and strategize just to stay viable for their communities. In short, this is not a one-size-fits-all state, just like San Francisco is not a one-size-fits-all city. From my vantage point, within our own Bay Area ecosystem, there are vast differences in our missions, our methodologies, our philosophies, and our politics. So, with this understanding, how do we unite ourselves to imagine a shared future that allows for all of our differences to flourish? Is that even possible? Is that a quixotic concept? Or perhaps a coded way of saying, let's keep the center in the center and the margin over there in the margin? How do we advance equity in that paradigm? And can that only happen in a destabilizing and fracturing way? Or is that in fact what we need to do now? Well, I'd love to tell you I have the answer to these and the myriad other questions that swirl in my teeming brain late at night when I try to go to bed watching The Bear. But these are the questions that I work alongside my staff at the council and the council itself and my colleagues across the state to crack. People have often asked me what my vision was when I took this job, and they still do. That's a tough question to answer because the questions can appear to occlude any real vision beyond the moment. But of course, that is not what I was hired to do. While Leslie Knope in the TV show Parks and Recreation proudly says that the best thing she can do as a government worker is show up and do the best that she can every day, I know that that's not good enough right now. Vision can also imply something monolithic. And since we are all driven by different needs and aspirations, why pretend that I have the key to the vision? In convening icebreakers, I'm often asked to name my superpower. I'm trying to, still trying to find it. But I think the one superpower I can name with some degree of accuracy is my instinct, or rather my sense of smell. San Francisco has taught me a lot. And while my heart is still here, the city is very much with me as I work across the state. When I was at YBCA, I enacted alongside my colleague Annalisa Escobedo a creative core program in collaboration with Carnival, with colleagues at Carnival, SF Backo, and Dance Mission to engage artists in short-term job opportunities in support of COVID safety. And with McLeet Hedero, I forged a partnership and deep relationship with Raquel Rodondiez and the community of Soma Pilipinas, one of our city's designated cultural districts. To me, these stand out for several reasons, not the least of which is that I am now in a position at the state level to help shepherd scaled up manifestations of initiatives like these. Thanks to my former boss, Deborah Cullinan, and my colleague, Julie Baker from Californians for the Arts and several others, the Creative Core is now a $60 million initiative aimed at piloting a workforce program for artists, culture bearers, and cultural workers around four key statewide issues. In partnership with 14 administering organizations around the state, we are piloting a program that puts our field to work. These organizations from the south to the north to the east to the west have devised unique community-driven approaches to the pilot to fund and sometimes provide full jobs with benefits to put artists to work in community. And the response of the field has been overwhelming. so much so that even the upwards of nearly $5 million administered by each of these 14 organizations can satisfy only a fraction of the appetite that artists are giving and wanting to get to work on issues that matter. At the state, we are so fortunate to shepherd the governor and legislature's allocation of $10 million to 14 state cultural districts. These are designated cultural districts. There are so many more that are designated. Two of them, though, are actually here in San Francisco, Calle 24 and Soma Pilipinas. In our cultural districts, we see communities drive their own strategies to integrate the arts into the economic, social, and physical vitalization of their neighborhoods and cities, safeguarding cultural heritage and living traditions as essential to the health and the well-being of the people who live, work, and play there. Two examples that I learned from San Francisco, now piloted at the state level, that aim to integrate artists into the workforce. That may not be a vision, but it is, if my instinct is right, the future. And that is where my scent is taking me, to the creative workforce. Alongside our allies in government and in advocacy, we are working to bring the Creative Corps pilot to its next phase, a cultural workforce program that brings real dollars to support our field employment opportunities. And we are doing the same with cultural districts. After allocating an extraordinary initial investment of $10 million to the 14 districts across the state, we will begin to develop plans to designate more entities, working with our current 14 to mentor those that exist and want to exist so that when the money is there, we are ready to increase our support of what can become a community investment strategy that is a model for our country. I believe that art is necessary at every level of life. Or as Dr. Maria Rosario Jackson, chair of the NEA and my personal hero, she believes everyone deserves to lead an artful life. And as we develop these pilot programs, we continue to deepen our commitment to providing funding that builds capacity, advances equity, and answers the call for support. Fun fact, of the 1,800 grant applications we received in our 2023 programs, of the 1,800, almost 1,200 were for general operating support. That tells you something, right? That tells you what we need. That's the best data you can have right there. We need the investment. We don't need more initiatives. We need investment. We need to be invested in. And by we, I mean you. Beyond that, a critical component of my job, which I hope I can do with 2020 Vision, is to ensure that our field is treated like the valuable workforce that they are. This will matter when budgets are being created and cut and when priorities are being developed. I and everyone at the California Arts Council wants to leverage the creative power in this room and all the rooms across the state to be thriving members of our creative economy, bringing the talent and skill that each of you possesses to bear on serving our communities in a myriad of ways that most of us have only begun to imagine. But we already have. Think of the teaching artist. Think of the healing artist. The artist in government, or as my colleague at the LA Department of Arts and Culture, Kristen Sakota, calls them, creative strategists. The list goes on and on because the need and the capacity will go on and on. Artists at work. That is what I believe instinctually can unify us. I know this day is called the state of the arts, but there is no fixed state. It's forever changing. Our resilience has been tested, and now we need to come back as a workforce that is powerful, essential, undeniable, and united. I look forward to our time together here and out there. Thank you very much.
Hey, everybody. My name is George Koster. I'm a co-creator of Voices of the Community. We're recording this for a TV show, radio show, and a podcast. Thanks, everyone, for showing up. We're now going to move into our breakout session. So we're going to strike this and set up five folks here on stage. The session in here is economic recovery of performing arts organizations. And then up in the roof, we're doing a breakout session on workforce housing for artists. And then after we finish our 50-minute session here, our next one in here will be economic recovery through the arts with another really wonderful panel discussion. And up in the roof, the second breakout session will be Proposition E from 2018 with an update discussion on what's going on with Prop E, etc. So you're welcome to go grab a bio break, etc., water, etc., and we'll start in about 5 minutes. We're just going to strike the stage. So thanks so much for all showing up.
That's it for this episode of Voices of the Community. We would like to thank our sponsors, the Zellerbach Family Foundation, learn more at zff.org, and the Peaceful World Foundation, learn more at peacefulworldfoundation.org. We would also like to thank Arts for a Better Bay Area, BayVac Media, and all our other collaborators that made this event possible. To find out more information about our guests and their respective organizations' programs, services, how to volunteer, and to make a donation, please go to georgecoster.com/voices of the community and click on the link to the Arts and Culture series. While you're on our website, please sign up for our newsletter and listen to the entire Arts and Culture series.